Forever Dog.
Welcome to another episode of Best Show Bests, the greatest hits of the best show, with me, your host, Tom Sharpling. If you like what you hear, make sure you join us every Tuesday night on Twitch at 6 p.m. Pacific for a brand new episode of the Best Show, featuring callers, celebrity guests, live music, and plenty of surprises. Enjoy! Is Adam Resnick here?
He is, yeah.
Would you come in, sir, please? If you don't mind. Remember, bees are juggalos, too. Speaking of the another person fresh from the gathering of the juggalos, we have Adam Resnick here, that throat clear was...
I'm sorry.
That's all right. Do you need something to drink?
I want you to keep going.
We have a refrigerator.
Fire, as always.
Well, thanks. So nice of you.
Oh, you know, I had a water and I forgot to bring it in.
Okay. Mike, can you tell Dudio to tell Pat to bring Adam's water in?
I can get my own water. Do you want to go out and get it?
No, somebody will help
okay.
you.
Okay, and this is shorting out still.
It is?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll get it. Okay.
That's okay.
There's another pair of headphones here. We'll. It's already breaking down. Our stuff's already breaking down. Pat's not out
thanks.
There.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, boy. Fresh one and the old one.
I like this.
Boy.
Oh, that's just... Yeah, you'll never... I've had this, you know, where your headphones go bad. You can't do it. You can't fix it. So, unfixable. I'll try. I can hold on to it and try to, like...
move it around, but
it doesn't stay.
It comes back to life.
Yeah.
It's already breaking down.
That took a blow. This took a blow.
Might as well just...
Someone hurt this one.
Set this whole place alight, right? Set it alight.
No, it's great.
And the best show. What do you think?
You want to try another one? We have other ones.
Yeah, let me try that.
Everybody, you got to know. You're asking... there's a few of you saying to yourself, who is Adam Resnick? Well, I'm going to tell you. This guy... He wrote a book, came out last year, called Will Not Attend. And it's one of the funniest books I've ever read. It's stories from his life. And he also wrote on the Late Night with David Letterman. And
good Bill Wendell.
Saturday Night Live. Right, you wrote on Saturday Night Live?
For like 2 days.
Yeah. For 2 days?
It was very short, yeah.
Were they good days?
No, actually, there was... It was a bad season, I think.
Making copies?
Yeah, that's good. That's perfect.
Awesome.
Here's this one. Thanks.
Oh, there we go. Thank you, Dudio.
No problem.
I tell you. What do you think of that, Mike? Dudio fixed the headphones.
Cans are a little hot, Tom.
Cans are a little hot. Yeah. Which channel is this, Dudio? Three?
Yeah, just go ahead and bring two and three down, just to be safe.
Okay.
Perfect.
Is that good?
That's perfect.
All right.
You know, when I was walking in, I
thank you.
I don't know the context, but... You have to tell me. You were saying something about the writer's room for the Flintstones or something.
I was trying to picture what that would be like. picture boards and them trying to break a Flintstone story. Like,
yeah, right.
They must have been doing two a day, though, right? Just like that's... Then Wilma gets a little elephant vacoom cleaner.
Well they had the Bible from the Honeymooners and just said, oh, let's do the one where, you know, that's all it was.
And then just like, man.
And then when that hit rock bottom and they brought in that Martian, you know. And that was like,
gazoo.
Yeah.
No pun intended, rock bottom. Right? That was no pun intended.
Very good, yeah.
Rock bottom. He could have been a character on the Flintstones. Rock bottom.
Produced by Steven Spielrock. Remember that?
Was that the movie?
Yeah.
Oh, can you imagine that movie?
Yeah, I've seen some of the sequels. Was there two?
Viva Rock Vegas.
Yeah, yeah,
there was
right.
Viva Rock Vegas.
Right.
Where, like, John Goodman, they were just like, where he's just like, nah, I'm not doing this one.
Actually, who was the guy? That was Friday. There was a guy, but I don't know who that was.
Who did? I think it was like, was it...
one of the Baldwins was Barney.
Yeah. Was it the guy from David Thewlis? Was that who it was, Mike?
I'm not sure that.
No, I'm kidding. It was
Michael Chiklis?
Michael Chiklis, he'd be a good Fred Flintstone, right?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. John Goodman was in the first one. Then they kept making them, and John Goodman was just like, yeah, I'm going to stop being in these now.
The first one, before it was, you know, it went through, I can remember there was a period where you'd hear a lot about it. You know, there'd been, you know, went through another draft and went to another writer. Mm-hmm. It was like the hottest thing in town was the Flintstones script.
To get on board.
To get on board. Because Spielberg was involved with it. And and so that's what they got.
Yeah, you get to punch up. I came up with a scene where Barney... can you imagine somebody like bragging? Yeah, I worked on the... That's me up there. That's my thing. Barney's got a... he made his own bowling ball with the bird.
Yeah, but imagine them, they're squirreled away with their stack of Flintstone VHS tapes, watching the episodes to get the inspiration.
Yeah,
like
with a pad.
Yeah,
scribbling frantically.
Yeah.
What if we have? What if we have Bam Bam do a? Should we save Bam Bam for the sequel? I mean, should Bam Bam? Do we want to? Do we want to cash that chip yet?
Right. Yeah.
Bam Bam might be good. That might be a good. Make a good plot point for the sequel. Like, maybe you guys should not hold back now on what the Flintstones movie should be. Yeah, and those birds, those animals. It's a living.
It's a living, all right.
It's a living.
I never get tired
birds,
of that.
Right?
Yeah.
The birds. Right? It's a living.
Yeah, and there was something that what was the vacuum cleaner? That was something.
It's like a woolly mammoth.
Yes.
Right? Like, hey, your purpose is you just eat dirt all the time.
Yeah.
This woman's going to just kick you, and you eat dirt. Just with your trunk, just suck up any dirt in the house. I don't eat dirt. That's not, I kind of don't live on dirt. I'm like an animal. Like,
right.
Consuming dirt is really bad for me.
and in the end, they just throw it in the closet, and that's it. Was there food in the closet for the vacuum cleaner?
I don't think we ever saw anyone eat any of the appliances, right?
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah. I never knew when I was a kid what that thing was on is it the ending or the opening credits where they pull into the drive-thru? Now I know it's ribs, but I never knew what the hell that was, that knocks the car over.
Yeah. Look, uncooked.
Yeah, uncooked.
Right?
Yeah, well, he was an animal. He was a caveman.
And that's the other thing, yeah. He was a caveman.
Yeah.
He's driving his car. The whole thing doesn't make sense. The whole thing is not
Donald
very
Trump
good.
Would say it was a disaster.
The Flintstones is a total disaster. like him just reviewing it. The show's stupid.
By the way, what happened since the ride over here, since I took the PATH train over? What's the latest with Donald Trump? What did he do in the last 20 minutes?
Did anything happen?
Yeah.
I didn't know anything happen. We're all in... there's a little bit of Hulk Hogan crisis. Here.
Yes, I know that, yeah, he was...
Because Mike doesn't want me to say it. Mike's a huge Hulkamaniac.
Oh, no, really?
I know. Mike was a huge... Do you ever see the commercial for the Hulk Hogan thing, the pasta? He opened, like, in the Mall of America, Hulk Hogan's pasta. And it was like, Pasta Mania. And then he's doing this thing, he's just like, all you kids out there, you gotta realize, my Pasta Maniacs... I'm looking lean and mean because I'm eating this pasta. It's like, yeah, that's always the first food you go to when you want to slim down. Just start pounding bowls of pasta. That's just a tried and true weight loss measure.
Yeah. Well, maybe he was appealing to the runners, the kids that were marathon runners.
There were no runners in his audience.
Like carving up or something.
No, they're sitting eating a bowl of pasta watching him wrestle. I'm leaning mean from all this pasta I'm eating.
Was this a canned pasta?
It was...
Chef Boyardee variety type of pasta.
But it was like he had like his like Hulk Hogan... Like the mall... I mean, have you ever been to the Mall of America?
No, I haven't.
I've never been there. It's what, in Minnesota?
Yeah.
Right?
And
it's like, it's got all these things in it. It's got a Ferris wheel and a roller coaster or whatever. It's just like, just seems like a garbage heap.
And also, I'm trying to figure a mall that large, what do they come up with that isn't just in like Garden State Plaza? All the stores are there, but what are the add-ons?
Yeah.
I don't understand what it is. Like how, I can't imagine. What could it possibly be?
You tell me I can't go out to Nyack.
Nyack,
right, mall.
There's everything at Nyack.
The Nyack Mall.
That food court is amazing.
It's got a Ferris wheel in it.
Ferris wheel in it. Joe's Stone Crab House, I think.
Do you know who ate at that food court every day for years?
No.
Jason Walliner.
Oh, really? Is he from this area?
He was from around there, and he worked near there, and he ate there every day.
I mean, I gotta tell you, I could almost do that. There's an IHOP in there now too. There's a lot of stuff in that food court. I'm sorry. And there was that place called Stir Crazy, which just went out.
Was it like walks and food?
Yeah, walks. Yeah.
He
that's so funny that Jason
ate at Fatburger every day, and then they gave him like a shirt, like, and then he was just like,
in L.A.
No, the one in Nyack. Like, he ate
was
it.
Was there a Fat Burger?
There was a Fat Burger there. And then...
It's funny. Gave him a shirt.
They gave him a shirt, and he's just... I think that was, like, the inciting moment when he was like, I need to change some things here in my life.
Yeah, that happens to me at Subway places where I end up going too much, and they start calling me boss and stuff, then I know I'm in trouble.
Because you like Subway a lot, right?
I mean, it's not like I think it's the greatest thing. It's just easy, and it actually is pretty good. And for a while, they're always getting it every single day, and those guys always recognized me. And the one time, then I was going to this one where I was running this office, and I changed offices and hadn't been there in like a year and a half, and I walked in. I walked in, boss, where you been? And it's like, how did all the people that come in that place,
Where have I been? There's one of these every three blocks. No offense to your Subway.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I was at a different Subway. It's like you're just like, no, we need to go 4 miles to that Subway over there. That's the best Subway. And then... there was this commercial, like, where the guy's, like, trying to say, like, hey, we can make the Subway sandwiches, like, we could give them some flavor. Is that, like, a complaint that they're flavorless? Like, there was, like, a commercial, like, actively addressing the idea, like, hey, we can add some flavor to your sandwich. Like, I didn't know that was a thing.
A problem that they'd been having.
I thought the whole thing was that the bread, you can smell it, like, it smells like it smells like industrial
bread and, or something. And when that stuff, if you dine in at the Subway, you know, as I've done plenty of times, that bread, once it attaches to the fabric to your clothing, that's it the rest of the day. You're in the Subway. That you're in a Subway, no matter where you are. It smells like Subway just from that, for their fresh-baked bread. It gets into your pores. It gets into your clothes. It's just...
It's like the new version of smoking is like a Subway.
Secondhand, yeah. Right, second, you get this secondhand bread.
Yeah, you got some second. Secondhand Subway.
Yeah,
on you.
It's worse in the city, and they're really dirty in the city. But like when I go to Pennsylvania, you could eat off the floor, and it's like my mom is behind the counter. It's like, hi, hon, what do you want? Everything is so civil and clean, but in the city, you take your life into your own hands when you go into those places. They're just, but I try to ignore it, you know?
I lost the taste for Subway at some point, and I never got it back.
Well, do they have Potbellies here in Jersey?
They do.
That's another Subway. But that place is bad. I never got into Quiznos. Never understood it. Never understood how to order there. Very confusing. Was that your place, Tom?
I was a Quiznos.
I don't know how to order. I don't know what it is. I don't know what that is.
After the one hurricane, after Hurricane Sandy, the only thing open in this one like stretch of like 30 miles was this one Quiznos was like open, and the line was out the door, and I was just like, I'm going to go to Quiznos and get it. It was like Grapes of Wrath. Everybody's at Quiznos. Yeah, right, yeah. And then there was a guy in front of me who's like ordering his sandwich. And if I remember correctly, he was like, everybody's just like, yeah, this place is the only place open in for miles. Just order something and be thankful that you got a sandwich and get out. And this guy was acting like it was any other day.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, can I get extra lettuce on that? They're like, well, you know, we're the lettuce. And he's like, there's trees everywhere. All the trees are uprooted because the hurricane came. There's no power anywhere. And you're acting like it's a normal day. It's like you're just at Quiznos. Can you believe the service at this Quiznos? That you don't.
That's right.
But yeah, so you're a Subway man.
Maybe
with this whole Jared thing, you could slide in there as like the new guy, right?
I thought about that.
Adam Resnick for Subway.
You know what's interesting? I look a little bit like him. I think. I think there's something that's what frightens me, just a tiny bit that bothers me. You know, when he lost weight, I thought, well, now he looks a little bit like me. But Jared, there's that. He's no laughing matter. This, but by the way, did that? Is that deal done yet? I haven't been following the latest. I mean,
I tuned out on the whole Jared thing.
Looks like a duck, walks like a duck.
Yeah. But it doesn't bear on the actual sandwiches like that.
Allegedly. No. I don't. He's the furthest thing from my mind, thank God, when I eat the sandwiches. Although I did, I stole from one of those little sort of like pyramid-shaped cards that fold under. You know, they later will say something like, you know, get a, you know, 24-ounce Coke with it. Those cardboard things that's in it. But there was one a couple years ago. It was something, he had some connection to Sharknado, I think the second one. And it was like, enjoying Jared for the premiere of Sharknado. And I grabbed that, and I don't know what happened to it. It's one of those things. I'm too old for crap like this. What am I going to do with it? You know, really? Am I going to really put it somewhere?
Sharknado.
Yeah, there was a Subway tie-in for Sharknado. Oh.
See, I don't get. We were talking about I don't get it. We're going to talk about that throughout.
Yeah,
the show.
I think that's cool that I like that.
Because like Sharknado, it's like manufactured garbage. Like they're just like, we know this is terrible.
Well, it's trying to be funny, right? Sort of the way I guess like Snakes on a Plane didn't start off trying to be funny; it became a joke, I guess, right? And so I think, it's riffing off of that Snakes.
But
on
it's
a plane.
It's so.
I've never seen it.
Artificial in the way that I wouldn't be able to like enjoy. Like, how you see how bad it was? It's like, yeah, they know it's bad. They actively put Jared from Subway in one of the things. Like, he's acting in it.
Oh, he's in it?
I think he acted in it.
Yeah.
Right? Did you see it, Mike?
No, I haven't seen it, but
What's up, fuckerinos? It's Tim Heidecker here. I want to tell you about our latest podcast, Office Hours Live, with my special guest, Mark Maron. Mark Maron was here. He sat with us. We talked. We got into it. We talked about our relationship. We talked about what's going on with him. And we talked about music and everything else. Of course, Vic and Doug were here, annoying the shit out of us with their drops. But it was a lot of fun. Check it out on any podcast app that you use.
Well said.
Find us at patreon.com/officehourslive.
Right.
Oof, mud on.
How's your toe?
We'll be right back.
Oh, Mike is so... He's off the wheels. Mike
checked
the wheels
out. He's not listening. I made him hungry for Subway. He's sneaking out.
He's going to go to Subway. You, Mike, Subway? Mike's a Blimpies.
Oh, I used to like Blimpies, but the one that I used to go to, it was on 8th Avenue. It's really dirty, so I had to stop. But for a while, I enjoyed it.
For a long time, Hoboken had the first Blimpies was in Hoboken, and the sign out front said Blimpies Base 1.
Oh, wow.
Yes. It was like, you know, you come in this Blimpies, this is like the cradle of civilization as far as sandwiches go.
That's where it all, that's the Darwin was in there. And,
Now, Adam Resnick, your book, Will Not Attend. It came out last year. In hardcover.
Right.
What if someone is just like not into hardcovers? Like what are they just out of luck? Or as Mike would say, SOL.
What's that? That's
it's blank out of luck.
Oh, I get you.
Yes.
No, I think there's still plenty of those around for people that want those. Let's call them collector's items.
Okay.
Joe Franklin, you know, claimed to have invented that phrase. Collector's item. That's the truth. He took claim to that. And he might be right. I don't know.
You might as well take credit for something that's unprovable like
that's
that.
That's right. And no one cares about. It's nothing to brag about, really.
Because you told that, and I'm just like, oh, okay.
Yeah, right.
Oh, okay, that's good. Right.
Yeah, but good I tried to do the math on that thing. Well, wasn't he doing? He was like the sandwich boy during the make-believe ballroom, and then he got the job there spinning records, so that would have been around, 49? And then I don't think he would have heard collector's item then. Now let's take it to the 50s. He gets his own little radio show. Maybe, possibly. It's starting to line up, you know, date-wise, the vintage of that term. But
it's a collector's item.
Yeah.
Because he had his...
Everything he had, of course, was a collector's item, so it was part of his...
Well, wasn't his office, like, notoriously, like... Just like headshots everywhere.
Yeah, I went in there when I first came to New York. I wanted to go see Joe Franklin just to see what that was like, and I was in there. And he's an interesting guy.
He's got headshots of
magicians and
And then it's like, then he can say, I had these famous people on, and I, like, he can be, I had the first, it's like, yeah, you had 80 million people. It's just like, at some point, you're going to trip over someone.
Yeah, well, he always says this, as the first one, and this, I don't know, the Springsteen one, I still think is unprovable, what he used to say, that is, he would always bring up in conversation, I had Bruce Springsteen, I had first, Barbara Streisand, blah, blah, blah. You know, they get big, they don't want to come back. I think that it reminds them of the days when they were struggling, that's why they don't come back. First of all, I'm unsure that I got to see the Springsteen on Joe Franklin show, but he did claim that.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, Springsteen, like, what did he do?
Mary Queen of Arkansas, probably. Do you remember when Jay Giles did it? You know, they made a whole show around it. It was a big. Do you remember that?
Around Joe being on Joe Franklin?
No, it was when they were. They'd finally. It was their first number one with a centerfold or whatever the other one for that album, and. And they came on this show. They basically they said that you know when Peter Wolf, your hero, would be like, yeah, Joe, when we were on the road. This is my Peter Wolf. We used to always talk about the day we have a number one. You know, we're going on Joe Franklin because we used to be up. You know, we'd be at motels late at night and watch your show. And so they sort of took over the whole show. But it was during the week that they were, I guess, in Madison Square Garden. They had a number one record. Everyone wanted Jay Giles on their show, and they said we're only doing Joe Franklin. So they did the entire Joe Franklin show. But it's It's actually not that funny when you watch the show itself, but it's he had no idea who they were. He just would be tell me again. Why'd you pick me? Why are you just doing my show? He'd never heard of them the day before, I think.
Are you making fun of me? Is this?
Yeah, that was always a big thing. Yeah, he didn't like Billy Crystal, your friend Billy Crystal. That was that really funny. Offended him. Anyone that imitated him, he didn't.
How could you not like? Well, I could answered my own question before I started. If you're famous enough, if somebody's doing an impression of you, that's a compliment, I think. Look, I got people, nobody does impressions of me here, right? You ever hear a good impression of me, Mike? No. Oh, I'm going to open the door to that. Anybody ever does an impression of me, I want to hear it.
It would be like someone doing an impression of Rich Little. What would that sound like?
An impression?
Rich Little's regular voice is a little bit... to the, I guess, a little bit off from Johnny Carson is his regular voice. Yeah. Don't you think that's the Rich Little?
Nah. When he would be, remember when he was on The Late Show?
Yeah, the Late Shift, yeah.
Yeah, The Late Shift. Yeah. It was like, the guy playing Letterman was like with that, he had that orange wig on his head.
Yeah.
Michael Clark Duncan.
Yeah, I think that, no, that's the guy from Green Mile, is it or whatever? Okay. I know the guy, other guy. That guy's kind of funny. I forget if you've seen him and stuff, but he did that, yeah.
And then he was like, supposedly at his, like, house, and he's, like, throwing baseballs.
Yeah, at a giant archery thing. Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, yee-hee!
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a scene I think he also had, like, on, like, a shirt like yours. What's that called? Or those are polo shirts, I guess.
Polo
shirt with a V-neck, sweater over that. But it was like no arms on it or something. It was just crazy looking.
But then he called Letterman. He was just like, he called Carson, and he's like, well, what should I do? I really want The Tonight Show. And then Rich Little played Johnny Carson in this TV movie about the whole Leno-Letterman fight. He's like, I would say, like, he was just like, he was like Rich Little in full, like he kind of lost the compass for his Johnny Carson impression at that point.
Well, don't you think it was a fascinating choice? Because that was Betty Thomas, I think, who directed that.
Yeah.
So, I'm sure there's a lot of discussion about it, and they thought, well, you know, he can do the voice without a doubt. The thing is, he can't act, so he's trying. His performance is him trying to push down that Vegas-y Johnny Carson thing that he does. Yeah. I would love to hear her directing him. You know,
yeah, but
he doesn't know the meaning of bringing it down. Just trying to say, yes, just play it real, just like you're Johnny Carson, just having a normal conversation. Yeah. I can't do it.
He just can't not be huge. And I would.
Yeah.
I would say. It's just like, what should I do, Johnny? I don't know what to do. I would say, like, we can, like, Rich, we can't understand what you're saying. I would say, take the, leave. It's like, I think he's doing his John Wayne. I think it slid into his, you're doing your John Wayne now, Rich. Now, Adam Resnick, you're both the hardcover book of Will Not Attend. Yeah. There is a paperback, though.
Is it out? It came out today.
Today? The paperback for Will Not Attend. One of the funniest books, if not the funniest book, I've ever read.
You're so sweet.
So many great stories. I'm telling you, you read this thing and you just laugh and laugh and laugh. It's a classic. It's a classic book. Classic. And I cannot give it a higher recommendation than to say, everybody hearing this, if you like this show, you will love this book. If you hate this show, you will love this book. And it's so good, and it's all these stories from your life. And when you went and wrote this book, these were all stories. Did you know these stories would make a good book throughout your life? Or was there just a point where you were like, okay, I'm going to write a book. What stories should be in the book?
Yeah, it sort of came. There's that, you know, the obvious ones I sort of scribbled down right away. Just the ideas, the stories I knew I were going to tell. And then the other, it came pretty easy. Mm-hmm. And then there's even some other ones beyond that I didn't put in the book because I thought it had already had the right amount. And I wanted to get out early.
Yeah, well, it's great. The story about the piano is so funny. Booker. And these stories, you're not going to suddenly, there's not going to be like a Booker sitcom.
No, but that it's interesting because when the book came out, there was a television. There were some people who were interested. I don't want to say anything, but I never wanted. Yeah. You know, that was one thing about when I wrote it. The great feeling was that it didn't have to be anything else, and I wouldn't. You know, I just wouldn't do that if it was gonna. It would have to be the greatest thing in the world. You know, like the greatest people directing it, the greatest people cast everything. That would and that ain't gonna happen. So it doesn't have to be. I like it just being a book. It doesn't have to be anything else. Why does everything have to be? You know. A
gateway,
TV,
yeah, exactly. Right. Like as if that's the top of the mountain.
Yeah,
is turning your thing into a TV show. No, it's great. It's such a funny book. Everybody that's should nice read. Will Not Attend.
Thanks, Tom.
We were talking about wrestlers earlier.
Let's go, man.
Because you grew up in
Harrisburg, and yeah, we used to go to the Zembo Mosque and see the WWF in those days.
So who did you see as a kid?
Well, of course, Andre was always there. Gorilla Monsoon, Tiger Chung Lee, and George Animal Steel.
This is you and your brothers.
Yeah. My younger brothers were really into it. They were obsessed. And it was, you know, that's when it was a different, you know, that's when there was like always like this old coot in the front row that kind of believed it, you know, I'm not saying this to be funny. I'm just adding the color. But this old coot happened to be a Holocaust survivor. You know, had like a, but he was he could still laugh a little. But it was just added to the flavor of the what he was. And I forget what he was like. Oh man, Mr. Goldstein's going nuts. He's wiping the salt off the red that Tiger Chung Lee put down to blind the guy. He would then Mr. Goldstein would run up and rub the salt off the ring and like you'll stop doing. You don't put the salt to put in his eye. You know, and it was.
And it's just like
it was.
They were doing a show here.
They were doing a show at the Zembo. It was my younger brothers. I don't know. They were probably when they were around 15. They'd be so excited. They sneak my mother's car out just to go. They'd skip school that day and go hang out at the Zembo by 10 or 11 just to watch them. You know, unload the ring, and then they would go find the wrestlers at the couple of motels they knew they stayed at. So they would like go. Bother Sergeant Slaughter. They paint this funny picture. Sergeant Slaughter, it was a sunny day, was sitting outside on like a little, lawn chair, and there's a little table there, and he was like paying his bills, writing his checks out. And then they would follow them to this restaurant on Route 22 called Acre's, and that was the place the wrestlers always went after the matches until my brothers found out, and all their friends and my brothers would try to just drive these guys nuts and sit down with them at the table, and they'd be, you know, like, you know, hey, Sarge, can I have your bread? And, you know, he blew up them. Yeah, take that bread, take my meal, take my drink, take everything. Just take it all. How do you like that? Just take it all. Drove these guys nuts. I mean,
so it's just these kids,
yeah,
who cracked the code for where when these guys are in Harrisburg.
They knew every move. I remember being with them in the car. My one brother was their twins was behind the wheel, and they chased down. And one car was after the match, and it was Roddy Piper and Greg Valentine. I forget. And it was this classic thing. And someone else, like the good guy and the bad guy, was in the same car. They're going. This is when they drove on to the next town. This is when it was really tough miles they put on. You know, between towns.
And so they would just be
followed them like crazy. And they finally pulled over in a gas station, and Valentine got out. And he just had like his little short shorts and on and some flip flops, and came and uttered some threats and then I think I said to Roddy, you know, I yelled through the windows, "You're the best, you're the greatest actor in the world, you know." Uh-huh. And then he yelled out the advice. He goes, you know, stay in school so you don't have to wrestle for a living. That's what he said.
And these guys are just like, this is... Because when they're doing Harrisburg, that's what you would call like a tertiary market.
Well, actually, that was a big one because we were close. We didn't realize. My brothers are like upset now as they're older. They realize that the main place they used to shoot from in the 70s is this place called the Hamburg Fieldhouse, which we realized was only about a half an hour from Harrisburg. And they're like, "I can't believe Dad never took us." You know, it was in Hamburg. We didn't realize that Hamburg was just like half an hour away. But that was where that was where they taped almost everything, and where Vince or Junior, as he was called then, you know, would also do the color for the matches.
And then, just at a point, wrestling, you just realize it's like, I can't.
When everyone else started to find it funny and it became kitsch, then it wasn't as much fun. Although some of those guys were still, you know, around WrestleMania is when it wasn't. But it was.
But now when you see like a WrestleMania thing and you see like Ariana Huffington is there and like Bill Simmons and all these people are like there, like it's like it's like the hoi polloi.
The hoi polloi. Yeah. Well, that was the first one too. Was like Liberace was the bell ringer, which was fun. I thought that was pretty funny.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Now, Adam Resnick, you worked on Letterman. Speaking of which, we were talking about Letterman. You worked. When did you start? On the late night.
Like 84. Late 84, I think it was.
Which is like 2 years in at that point.
About
like
that,
right? The show's and you were just like fresh out of...
No, I was still in college. I got there as an intern. I got there as an intern. Then I dropped out because it was looking good that I would get hired. So
Yeah. So you dropped out of school to get the job because you were working as an intern.
Yeah.
And then you start writing your start pitching things.
At the time, that's, you know, it was a small shop then. It was like a nice little clubhouse. Mm-hmm. And Chris Elliott became a writer by, those are the days that, you know, he'd put some jokes on Dave's assistant's desk and he'd read them. And if he liked them, you know, maybe he'd hear from him. And Chris and Steve O'Donnell both encouraged me to do that. And so I'd start writing opening remarks and I'd hand them to the assistant. And then he called me in one day and said, "All right, you're good. I don't want to write some more." And I just walked out thinking, oh, man, that's good. Well, that actually was a huge turning point in my life, that exact moment. It was like something is going to change for me.
Yeah.
Because I went in thinking, you know, it wasn't expected that I would be a writer, but I went in thinking, if I have to be here until I'm 30, I will be an intern until I'm 30 if it means that I'll eventually be a writer for the show. But I just knew. It was the right place for me. It was the only place for me, actually.
And then when you first saw it, were you just like, this is... Did you watch the morning show?
No, I actually didn't. I remember my mom mentioning to me one time, I was probably walking out the door, I think I was, sometime, whenever that, when was that, like 1980 or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. And she's like, "Hey, you know, you don't watch, it's this David Letterman, he's really funny." And I didn't know, I'd never heard the name before, and I was thinking, you know, there's that singing group, the Lettermans, or just like some lame show like Dinosaur. So she's like, "You should watch that David Letterman, he's funny." I'm like, "Yeah, okay, Mom, right. Okay, see you later, enjoy that." I had no idea, so I didn't see it. I've seen it, you know, since then I've seen parts of it, like the Andy Kaufman stuff.
Yeah, it was nuts.
But the other one I watched from the first night, because I watched Tom Snyder every night, so I was there, you know, the from the very first late night I was watching.
It's yeah, it's crazy how, like, it got another chance. Like, he, like, ate it on that,
right,
that show, like a 10 a.m. show or something. And then it's just like, nah, this guy's still good. And still, there's a home for him somewhere.
Yeah, that was, well, yeah, that was great. After Cabin Boy, after the first, you know, maybe it's the second weekend that it had been out, I was just so, you know, which really you, depressed, you so upset. You know?
Co-wrote and directed
Cabin and, Boy. And, yeah, okay, so, but it was such, you know, just this awful, awful experience I've never seen. I mean, you know, Chris and I were, you know, just dragged through the mud worse than anyone. But, you know, like, what's Sandler's movie now that people are talking about? Or, you know, it was, that's nothing compared to what, you know, if you remember Cabin, what that was like, the reception, if that's what you want to call it. But anyway, so I went up and talked to Dave and, you know, and just was, you know, upset to say, I don't know what I'm going to do. I mean, I'm really scared. I don't think I'm going to work again or this and that. And he told me, he goes, and he was really nice. He said, look, take the gun away from your head. He goes, I'm telling you, I went through this when I lost the morning show and, you know, you gotta, and he actually gave me a metaphor about some race car driver that was really doing badly and then suddenly was the top race car driver. I don't know. I don't follow racing, you know, and that was really nice. But, and it's, so it was so nice of Dave. He made me feel really, really good, but I'll talk myself out of anything. So as I was, after I was leaving, I was thinking, yeah, that's right. Dave lost the morning show. But then I forgot, but that show was good. It won an Emmy, and I think they gave him like a couple million bucks just to hold him for a year to do nothing. Something. So. All right, not quite the Cabin Boy. But it was
because
still nice nonetheless.
Yeah, because you really got dragged through the mud on the on that. But now, yeah, look, it's cold comfort, as they say, in some regard. But it's like, now it has found its audience, and now it has found its the level of respect and appreciation that it was due the whole time.
Whatever it is, I'll take it right now. But I do recognize that it's, you know, it's a very small cult of that and it's you know, it's I can't even get into all the Cabin Boy stuff. We've been down this road. It's a long story. It was nothing that was something that sort of like fell in our lap. Chris and I, we weren't out to do that project. And so it's a very confusing thing. I don't know whether to defend Cabin Boy. I don't know whether to, you know, just say, you know, I agree. I know it's awful, but I don't think it's awful. I don't think it's great. But I do think the thing I'm at peace with, and I haven't seen it in, you know, what, 15, 20 years, whatever the hell, but is that it is different. That's all I'll say. If there's no there's no kids, there's no 20 somethings in the movie, just a bunch of old ugly guys, and Chris and I are proud of that. That's how it was cast. You know, it was like there's no eye candy in that movie.
Yeah, it's not like it's
who would go see the thing about that?
Yeah, because it's the thing you wanted to see,
right? I just wanted it to be like character actors, you know. We're thinking of movies like Captain's Courageous, or like, well, who's a John Carradine sort of guy? Let's find a guy that looks like a John Carradine. You know,
yeah, and now would be
that,
like,
was a good reference for executives back then.
Yeah, yeah, and you'd have to have somebody like when they redid the movie Tron, like they did the new Tron,
like that had to be done.
Like they had to have like some like hunky dude in it.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't enough to just have, like, Tron in it, right? I remember seeing Tron at this theater near my house. I would ride my bike to go see Tron. I saw Tron maybe every night like, I would just go, like, yeah, 7:30 show, Tron.
Right.
Ride my bike. I'll go see Tron tonight.
Does that stand for something, by the way? Sorry.
I don't know. It was, and then I saw it like a few years ago, and it was like, this is the worst thing I ever saw in my life. How did I sit through this once?
Well, that was it was a bomb, right, when it came out? I don't think it was considered. Was it considered good?
I don't think it did amazingly well. I think it did okay.
I never saw the movie. It's not a movie I would have seen, but I did like the video game. Did you play the video game?
I did play the video game, yeah.
That tank part of it was really fun. I wish there was a whole machine of just the tank part of that. There was like four different games in that machine.
There was the light cycles.
Yes, thank you.
Then there's the thing where you're throwing like it's like a version of High Lie.
Yeah, and there's
rings with these rings that would get knocked, disintegrated.
And some spiders or something coming down.
I think that sounds familiar.
Yeah.
And it'd be this thing where, like, you watch Tron now and you're like, oh, all they did was just steal everything from Star Wars. And just like, this is the most shameless. They should be ashamed of themselves.
That's funny. I didn't even know that. They said they're really, that's what it is. Oh, it's the timing's right, I guess, for a Star Wars ripoff. Yeah,
it's the worst. Hey, Mike, who's good here? One, we're going to talk, are there people talking about I don't get it? The topic being I don't get it, where it's the things you tried and you don't get. Do you have anything like that, Andy?
Andy.
I'm sorry, I was thinking Andy Kindler. Well, do you know Andy Kindler?
No.
He's very funny. I love, he's going to, that's going to make his night that you just went, no.
I know the name. No,
he's a stand-up. He's very funny.
Oh, you know, actually, I know the name.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's
well, Adam Resnick, you think about one that is something you can't just get. You've tried to get into it. You can't get into it.
All right. I don't want to start anything.
Well, let's see what this person has to say.
Oh, I guess here we go.
Best show, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. This is Adam from Tampa.
Adam from Tampa. What's up, Adam?
Well, I had one for the topic, and you guys were also talking about wrestling earlier.
Yeah.
And it got me to thinking about the day I gave up on wrestling.
Okay. What is the day you gave up on wrestling?
It was about 92, I'm going to say. I was watching Earthquake and Jake the Snake.
Okay.
And they were, you know, they were in a heated rivalry at that point. And Earthquake pulls Damien, you know, out from under the ring, you know, Jake's snake, and jumps up and down on Damien, and then the bag is opened, and you see very obvious ground beef coming out of the bag, raw ground beef.
Uh-huh.
Me and my dad are watching wrestling. I look at my dad, and he says, I've been telling you for years. Broke my heart.
So the ground beef was what, to feed the...
No, that was supposed to be the snake.
My God.
The smashed snake. They used ground beef in place of what a smashed up snake would actually look like.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. It was so dumb I couldn't follow it. You ever have that happen where you're watching something, watching like a movie, and you're just like, or somebody tells a joke. You ever read like a Bazooka Joe comic? It's so dumb.
You're getting eye strain trying to read every word.
And you're like, maybe this is going over my head because there's no way that the joke could be this simple and stupid. So that's what it was. Ground beef in a thing.
And then, you know, of course they have the news. They had Mean Gene reporting about it in the next week's thing. And he talks about it just being too savage to watch. And, I mean, Mean Gene's known for overdoing it, but this was overdoing it even by Mean Gene's standards.
Mean Gene, he always always talking about the Pontiac Silverdome.
Yeah, that's right, the Pontiac.
This week at the Pontiac Silverdome, Macho Man Randy Savage and Hulk Hogan, right? And then you'd just be like, where's the Pontiac Silverdome? Was that like outside of Detroit, I guess?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Ground
beef. Yeah, like Auburn Hills.
You're bumming me out. Best show, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, who's this?
My name's Paul from Queens.
Paul from Queens, what's going on? Do you have something for the topic?
I do.
What do you got?
I do. My entry is OK Computer.
You can't understand the Radiohead album, OK Computer.
Well, I don't know. I think I understand it. I just don't feel it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't feel it. You try to listen to it. You try.
I bought it.
You bought some music.
Yeah.
A looky loo. How about that? What'd you buy? What'd you buy it on CD? You bought a iTunes download? What did you do?
I bought it on CD.
Okay. Mm. And you just don't like those. It. The one Radiohead album everybody understands is the one you don't get. What about the other ones? You ever tried the other ones?
Well, I like the Bends.
Oh, you like the Bends.
I feel a little more. It's a little more, fun or emotional or whatever fun. I can it's more tap fun. Into it.
Yeah, you know that fun Radiohead album? Yeah. It's like, that fun one, the Bends. There's no fun Radiohead albums. So stop looking for any fun. There's other places to go get fun.
That's what I've learned, I guess.
Go get a Miami Sound Machine album. You want fun, right? You guys looking at Radiohead for fun. Go get a Black Eyed Peas album. All right, that's driving me nuts.
That drove you nuts, really?
A little bit, because he's talking about these things. Radiohead is denying him the fun that he thought. He was going looking for fun. Like, just can't find any fun on these Radiohead albums. Best show, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Amy from Portland.
Amy from Portland?
Yeah.
How are you, Amy?
I'm doing good. I'm just cooking dinner.
So, Amy, do you have something for the topic? Is there something you don't get?
Yeah, so I've tried, and I've never got Seinfeld.
Can't understand Seinfeld.
It's funny from time to time. Like the soup Nazi episode was funny, kind of, I guess. Uh-huh. I don't know. I tried.
Just don't like it. Which character do you like the most?
I don't know. I've tried it enough, but not well enough to know who I like. Elaine, maybe? I
like Elaine.
She's pretty funny. She's, like, consistently funny, I think.
Do you think it might be that you don't like the character Seinfeld on Seinfeld?
I was, like, jumping up and down with joy when you put him on the 100. The worst I did a, 100. Like, impromptu worst, gig at home when you put him on
the worst 100 fiction. We did it over the last few weeks, the list of the worst 100 fictional characters of all time. What number did Seinfeld come in at? Very high. I think he might have come in at 2.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because he's like the weak link on the whole thing, right?
No, I know. And it's like, it would be a much better show without that character, but then it's named after him, so you can't kill him off.
Well, what if that show was called Crystal, and you just swap Seinfeld out for Billy Crystal, and you just have him in that role? Right.
I think you found a way to make it worse.
That suddenly you'd be begging for Seinfeld to come back.
Yeah, at that point, I probably would.
Yeah,
Billy Crystal is not going to play the straight man. He would give it something.
He'd have to be.
So what
like
you're saying is that when I watch
little...
Seinfeld and I get angry, I should just imagine Billy Crystal, and then all of a sudden I'll get into it more.
What? Say that again.
Like. So when I watch Seinfeld and I'm like, this isn't for me,
you just imagine
Billy Crystal.
Imagine Billy Crystal in it and then remember Michael Richards' Laugh Factory tirade and know that Seinfeld is hate speech free. You're not going to get that. He's not going to burst into waves of unchained hatred. Thank you for the call. Yeah, Billy Crystal would not be able to play that straight.
He would, because it would, he wouldn't give people their money's worth. He's in a,
still
he's
fooling
there to be
him.
Funny. Yeah, still fooling.
Still fooling him. He's always making that face.
That's amazing. Yeah.
That's a certain era of performer where they always have that, they pull that face. Like Paul McCartney always does that kind of like that. Ooh,
yeah, right,
face.
Yeah.
Like with his mouth.
I know exactly.
Oh.
Sure, right.
Yeah, like, it's like, I'm not a baby. Why are you... You're making faces as if you're in front of a crib.
Yeah.
Trying to get a baby to smile.
Yeah, he does that face. Also, the Mr. Saturday Night did that face a lot, too. That character in the movie with the same name.
Mr. Saturday Night. I love anybody who has their opus that they're waiting to get to. And then there's just a point where it's like, it's not going to work. Like, you're not going to... This is not going to... You're not going to match the thing he see. I need to tell the story of Buddy Young Jr., the whole thing, and he's working on this epic. Mr. Saturday. Like, in his mind, like, he cashed every chip he had to do that. All the goodwill from when Harry met Sally and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of an expensive movie. Oh, and he directed it, too.
Yeah. So, you know, in his mind, he saw awards.
Yep.
You know. And the award for best director goes to Billy Crystal, Mr. Saturday Night.
Well, that's back when you can still make movies for adults. Oh, wait, they didn't show up either.
Then, yeah, people don't want, everything's got to have the kids. I just made a thing. Like, who's that for? It's like not for any, like no adult wanted.
It wasn't even for like the Jews. I don't even think they came out for it.
I don't think it was for anyone who was in show business at that point. Like, would not have wanted to see a look back at it as told by him.
Oh, great. I'm getting criticized from the cabin boy guy. That's what he's thinking right now. He's
great. The,
I don't know. He's a nice guy.
Yeah.
And so is Andy Kindler, who I have heard is actually funny.
He's very funny. Yeah. I'm listening to The Best Show, and then the guy who directed Cabin Boy, is putting down Mr. Saturday Night.
Who's he to talk?
Yeah. The great thing about that show, The Comedians, was that every episode had, like, they would have, like, three or four, like, because it's like a behind-the-scenes thing. It would just be like, well, you're with the... They'd have all these things that just pump up Billy Crystal. But it would just be like, oh, my God, it's Billy Crystal. Like, people, like... Oh, well, Billy Crystal, what are you doing here? Oh, my God, I'm a huge fan. Like, every episode had a few of these, like, things that were just meant to make it look like anybody would just be blown away that Billy Crystal walked into the... Oh, my God, it's Billy Crystal.
I never saw it. I saw the commercial. So how many episodes?
I think they did 13.
And how'd it do? Is it coming back?
It's not. It just got canceled.
Oh.
But, yeah. And Gad, Josh Gad, take it on the chin. Bad week. Bad week to be Josh Gad.
Wait, what was the
Pixels.
Oh, that's right. He's in Pixels. At first, they were saying that was doing really well. They were surprised, like, Sandler fooled them all. But then by Sunday, I was reading, no, this is a disaster.
It's just,
But it did came in number one or number two, I guess.
It came in number two. That movie ain't cheap. You think it's cheap to get Pac-Man like to show up?
Right.
Pac-Man doesn't come through the door for... Pac-Man doesn't get out of bed for less than 50 grand. Best Show, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Hi, Adam.
Hey.
I got one for the topic. I don't like figure skating. I don't know what the deal is with that.
You don't like figure skating?
That's good.
And you've tried?
No, I've skated, you know, many times, but I don't...
What kind of skating have you done? Down
just
in Tampa.
Getting around the rink, you know, just doing twirls and stuff, just around the rink.
Okay.
You
know? So angry about it.
I can appreciate figure skating. I have watched it for, since 1980, you know, since the Olympics. And, I don't get it, man.
No.
I think it's a good one, actually.
Yeah, it was all right. Like, it was a little... That one you have to let go, because that's like...
Or is it just stating the obvious? I don't know.
I always think of it as the kind of thing where it's like one that's like your... It's like when people say to me, it's like, you should like Steely Dan. And it's like, okay, there's things I like that sound like Steely Dan. I just don't like Steely Dan.
Paul Simms likes Steely Dan. Did you read the conversation? He really...
Paul Simms likes Steely Dan.
Yeah, and I respect him for it because he's really, you know, he's into it. He likes them and he appreciates them. I guess I like a couple of their songs. I don't know. I really don't know.
But to me, it sounds like music you hear when like somebody's trying to sell you a stereo system and they play.
That's
like,
true. That is.
They play Steely Dan at the stereo store.
Right.
Listen to the. Just listen.
Asia.
Like you're in like the. The audio room at the stereo store.
Yeah, they've got the quad 8-track they put in.
And
of,
the guy's
of Asia.
He's got like the buttons to press. Like it's like, oh, let's see your speaker too. And they press it, and so suddenly it's like you hear like the speakers, and it's just it's like that's listen to that. That's a Peg. We're gonna play. I'm gonna play Peg. Listen to the hi-hat on that.
Yeah.
So can I ring you up for that? Can I ring you up for that stereo?
No.
Yes, you can, as long as it doesn't come with this Steely Dan album. Hmm. You, Adam Resnick, you author of Will Not Attend in paperback as of today. And that's available in stores, right? Like bookstores will have the paperback now.
Yeah, I haven't checked, I assume.
Your Letterman thing, by the way, when you were promoting the book, was one of the funniest things, because you just like, you seem like you're one of the few people who can like give him the business.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The first one, the second one was not quite as good. He had me on again.
But when you were just saying the thing about Disneyland, that's another great story in the thing, in the book, about you and your family going to Disney World?
Yeah.
Disney World, yes. Right. Yes, and you were at the chocolate buffet. What was it? The
Tomorrowland dessert party cafe buffet or something like that, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tomorrowland Terrace Dessert Party, I think it's called.
Yeah, and then you saw Tinkerbell gets, like, flying around there.
On a filament or something.
And then your sister-in-law.
Yeah, looked like a dude, I thought.
Your sister-in-law blew a fuse.
Yeah, well, that had been, it had been coming a long time.
Yeah, it, yeah. But you like music that's more like you like things that you'd hear on an episode of like Louie, like it would be like a Woody Allen soundtrack.
No, that's like, come on. that's like the New Orleans newish version of re-recorded New Orleans music that he does. He plays it where does he play it at? The Alice's Teacup or some place out of the city. I don't know.
Can you imagine going and watching him play clarinet all night?
Yeah, and you can't get out. You can't leave. You're in there. And I hear it's actually really expensive too. You don't just go. You have to, you know, and it's a. Yeah. I think it costs you a few hundred bucks a seat just to go in there.
To watch him do something other than the thing that you know him for.
Right.
Now you got to watch him play some Bix Beiderbecke outtakes.
Right.
Or whatever. Like he's playing.
Outtakes, that's right, yeah. Like,
I Got a Brand New Hat.
Sidney Bechet.
Like songs like that.
Yeah, right. I got a brand new, Tin Roof Blues.
But you like music like right?
No, sir. No, that's Powerhouse. That guy's Powerhouse. Yeah, what's his name? That guy that did for the Looney Tunes. I forget that guy. Oh, Randolph something Scott.
Sure.
Raymond Scott.
Raymond Scott.
Yeah, no, that's the '40s. That's too late for me.
Okay. You like music, it's who is this old music you like? Who are these artists?
God, now you just wouldn't just throw it out like that. There's a guy, Wilton Crawley, I like. Okay. Those are my favorite tracks. You Ought to See My Gal by Wilton Crawley. Jelly Roll Morton plays piano on that track. That's one of my probably favorite jazz tracks. That's probably like 1929. Okay. Like that. Yeah.
And how did you get into that stuff?
I just like that sound. I like that sound, man. I don't know what it is. I didn't know what it, you know, I used to hear it in the cartoons, you know, they show those, you know, did they still show some of those black and white cartoons when you were a kid, like on cable? You're like, we had like not that much cable, but you know, the Philly channels, you'd see like these old cartoons that have those Fleischer cartoons that have those jazz scores. And that's, and I really like that, but I didn't know what it was called or anything. But,
and then you're just like,
I started collecting 78s and learning about it and got more specific the more I learned about it that I realized that the really good stuff wasn't recorded after 1932. It was like probably between 1925 and 1932, and I'll tell you why.
Why?
See, my ear can detect the first strains of swing, and that's disgusting. That's awful. That's crap. And that's because around 1933, 34, they started removing the banjo from the orchestras, and that it lost that sound, and then came that swing sound, which I detest.
Okay. So you don't like jink, you like jink 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 jink, like that kind of banjo driving it.
Right.
Okay.
That syncopation, that old, you know, that syncopated rhythm that you know, started in the 20s.
So like Woody
Woody does a version of that, but it's like sort of like the new, his stuff reminds me more of that, you know, New Orleans funeral music. I mean, a lot of good jazz came out of New Orleans. I mean, Louis Armstrong came out of New Orleans, but yeah.
But what about like the guys like the like you, like a guy like all that kind of like like who are the big band leaders from back then who you can't stand?
Tommy Dorsey, Glenn Miller, Swingin' Sway with Sammy Kay, all that crap, all that stuff that Bobby Sockers listened to.
Yeah.
That all started like the, you know, mid-30s garbage.
And do you have 78s that you collect?
I still have a lot of those. I don't collect them anymore because they're impossible to find.
Sure.
Yeah.
Like what's the craziest one you ever bought?
I never paid any money for them. They were always just flea market finds. Sure. And they, by the way, very hard to find. It was like you didn't find them. I mentioned in my book, probably Hatchet Head Blues with the old Southern Jug Band.
Okay. So not like...
I don't even like the record that much, but that's probably the most valuable record. One of them. I don't have a great collection, like people like Terry Zweigoff have, or Joe Bizard, or, you know, those guys.
Sure. But it's not like...
Because I never found... Pennsylvania, it was a lousy place to look for those good records. Because
The thing is, like, I would go look at, like, my grandparents' records, and it'd be like... And then you see, it's like, man, oh boy, did my... this had, like, bad taste. It'd be like, if only Engelbert Humperdinck was, if he's collectible, suddenly there's, like, a weird wave of that, then, like... Like, I'm on Easy Street.
Oh, yeah, you'll never, your grandparents' stuff isn't worth anything.
No, it's, just like, it's like a garbage heap stuff.
Yeah,
like, it's the dump.
Yeah, that's how, you know how many times I would go, I'd try to track people down. Oh, I have some old records, and it's just all crap. I'm, no, 78s, well, I got them, and bring out, like, you know.
And you go.
Dinosaur, you know, or this one I know is worth money. It's like Bing Crosby, White Christmas. They printed 2 billion of those. The planet will blow up. There'll still be some of those 78s
floating
Bing Crosby.
In space.
Yeah, it's
just, yeah. It'll be that and A Taste of Honey, the Herb Alpert.
Oh, you're talking about 33. Yeah, that's true. I can picture that cover too. Yeah, that's, it's just all
the whipped cream.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
You have that record, Mike? Best Show, you're on the air.
Hey, I got a question for you, too.
What do you got?
So I learned recently that there's a sequel to that song, It's My Party and I'll Cry If I Want To.
Yeah, it's called Judy's Turn to Cry.
Exactly, exactly.
The revenge
Judy's
song.
Judy's Turn to Cry.
Yeah.
Exactly. She gets her comeuppance.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if you knew of any, or if you had any ideas for songs that you thought deserved sequels, where the story wasn't finished yet.
That's a good question.
Yeah, that is a very good question. Song that would have a sequel.
Yeah, because I know there's Return of Jackie and Judy by the Ramones, but that's the only one I could really think of where it's like a real sequel.
What about...
And even that one's kind of phoned in.
What about if there was a sequel to Young Turks by Rod Stewart? Young Turks 2. Because it ends with, like, Jackie gave birth to a 10-pound baby boy, yo, yo, right? Young hearts be free tonight. And then, like, you find out where those guys are at now, right?
That's good.
Not happy. It wouldn't be happy.
What about the Ballad of Dwight Frye, Alice Cooper? Like, does he ever get out? And what happens?
That'd be a good
one. Does he get a job?
That he's just like, yeah, I like
that. He probably cleans up eventually. They probably have to, you know.
That's a great song.
I like that song.
Yeah. Somebody sang here, Disco Duck should have a sequel. How is it that, like, look at, just think about this. Not that I'm making it about me again, but I'm gonna for a second. A guy like Rick Dees, no discernible talent, except for that he just plays the game. Records this thing, Disco Duck.
Right.
Clearly he must have just been playing his own record and just ran his own thing up the charts. You know, hey.
Oh, it was the legend was that he was the first one that played it and turned it into a hit.
If you're in radio and... But it's just like this guy, Rick Dees, could buy and sell me. He could throw money at me and make me dance and just... Like, is that fair? Is that fair, Adam? No. In life? It's not fair.
No.
Is it fair that a guy like Mike is cleaning up the way he's finding his second, he's in his like renaissance now.
Right.
And I'm just here in the tank. I'm in the tank with this. I'm hemorrhaging money here.
Really? I mean, with but this you're, show. But how can that be? Seriously. Now I sat here tonight. You were entertaining for 3 hours.
Yeah.
I don't understand how you do it. You make it look easy.
Well, it happened. It's just going to be, you carve that on my tombstone then. He made it entertaining for three.
Maybe, how, you know, is it that come? You're perceived as East Coast? They don't think, you know, it's, no, he's an East Coast guy, you know.
Maybe I should just be turning this into a TV show or something. Maybe that's what the problem with this show is, right? It should just be like, make it a TV show. Maybe everybody get it then. I don't know.
I don't think so.
I don't get it. Maybe I got to write a book, but I'll never write a book as good as Will Not Attend, so I'm not going to even try that.
That's really nice.
It's in paperback now. It's probably the funniest book I've ever read. There's a great story about your musical love in that and you chasing after a...
Jimmy Rogers picture disc.
Yeah. It's so great. And so when did you work on SNL? I wasn't clear on that.
It was actually, I think it was the year, maybe the 2 years after Cabin Boy, but it was when Chris was there. And Chris brought me up and Jim Danny was there and who I knew a little bit. And they really needed writers at the time. That's when then there was a lot of trouble. Remember, like, it was the cut that New York Magazine.
Saturday Night
yeah,
Dead.
Yeah, yeah. So they were, you know, trying to overhaul everything. But it was a really big cast. So that guy from Kids in the Hall was there. And I think Janine Garofalo and Chris. It was an awkward cast. And people like Adam Sandler and Farley and those guys were about to leave and do movies. And it was just, yeah. I remember, I wasn't, you know, I hardly spent any time there. I went in and helped write a couple of things for Chris, but it was dreary, really grim up there.
But you stay on your feet, Adam.
Yeah.
How do you do it? I'm on the mat here. Got this cord is short circuiting here. The headphones weren't even working. I'm going to have to hear a song and dance from Dudio about why it's Mike's fault that it happened, and Michael blame Dudio, and then Pat will stab both of them in the back.
It's dysfunctional out there. I knew it the second I came
in. It is. It's like a hornet's nest out there.
Right. But look what you do for these guys, and that's why you get up in the morning. You gave them lives, you know? You gave them...
Where do you think if it... Let's do a It's a Wonderful Life scenario right now. I get smeared. I turn into just get smeared on the pavement, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
Where does AP Mike end up?
Well, I'm just trying to think. If you get smeared on the pavement, something happened to you, how would we monetize that? Yeah, I mean, the box sets are already doing well, but you have a lot of tapes. You've got a lot of stuff banked, so we can maybe get a little money that way.
Okay.
But
how does my life, how does me not being here for AP Mike, how does that change?
I just realized I didn't get the concept. But I get it. Yeah, no, I think AP Mike probably, it's sad, he tries to take over for a little while.
Uh-huh. And then it just falls apart?
Yeah, pretty much. I think, it's sad. Mike, I love you. You're great. But I just think he's a little lost, but I think maybe he thinks he'll keep it going a little bit till he gets someone else in here.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, that guy would pay him, and then maybe Mike would take him to the top, and they would...
So Mike would just hope nobody... Mike would be trying to move like a Dick Clark-type move and hope nobody noticed.
Right, right.
Yeah. He doesn't bring anything to the table himself.
Yeah. No, I don't know. I can't, all right. I can't say that.
Look, I think Mike would end up... Mike would end up just... There'd be a ski mask involved.
What?
No offense, Mike. Mike said none taken. You're tired?
I'm a little tired. I mean, I gotta. Will one of these cabs actually take me the whole way to the city? Someone's gotta
figure
it
out. Don't worry.
What's that place on the one main street said steam crabs? Because I love Maryland crabs. You know the place I'm talking about?
No.
Okay. Something we'll talk about.
Steam crabs.
You don't like, you like crabs? You know, hard shells? Maryland crabs? We'll talk about
it. I like crabs. You like crabs, Mike? Okay, but boring. Never, he's just rambling. Like,
I brought the room down.
He, tell me what you think of this. Mike, a couple years ago, he drives down to go see a friend in Florida.
Yeah.
And what he does is he loads up a cooler up here with shrimp.
Oh, God, it takes it down to some of that.
And takes it down because he had his... He
was some crushed ice in there. Yeah, and
he was bragging about his Kinect up here.
Yeah.
That he had,
yeah,
like a seafood... He kept calling Kinect, it his, yeah, Kinect.
Right.
His seafood Kinect. And he drove down... It's like... It's not like he drove to, like... Not like he drove to, like, Ames, Iowa, where, like, it's landlocked.
Yeah.
He drove to Florida.
No, and isn't it, there was no dry ice involved, right?
No, he's just got a cooler. He's at a Quick Check buying, yeah, a bag of ice.
Oh my God!
And dumping it on top of his shrimp. Right, Mike?
The Best Show is produced in partnership with the Forever Dog Podcast Network.
Probably have to put a lot of
the show is hosted by Tom Sharpling, John Worster, Michael Lisk, Jason Gore, and Pat Byrne. The show is produced and written by Jason Gore, Pat Byrne, Michael Lisk, Brett Davis, John Worster, and Tom Sharpling. The Best Show is executive produced by Tom Sharpling, Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. Co-executive produced by Jason Gore and Pat Burns. Segment producer, Michael Lisk. The show is engineered and mastered by Andrew Gleason and Wesley Knapp. Graphic design, video editing, and social media by Brett Davis. Website and technical support by Martine Sellis. And the show is recorded at Forever Dog Studios in Los Angeles. Support The Best Show on Patreon over at patreon.com/TheBestShow, and follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at Best Show for Life. That's Best Show number 4 Life. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.